Blog Talk Radio.
That work. James Bostic here, Conservative's Perspective on the Patriot Nation radio, almost said mojo, on the Patriot Nation radio network here at blogtalkradio.com. We do it twice a week. We do it live Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We have a recorded version of the program as well that goes out on the Mojo 5.0 radio network. We do that Sundays. It goes on the air Sundays, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and then at various times throughout the week from there. Well, hell, it's the silly season. I don't know what else to say. You know, I mean, and that's what I talked about on Sunday show, actually, was the fact that it's summertime. They're going to go home. You know, they're going to monkey around here a little while in Washington, D.C. Then they're going to go home. And they're going to hide from town hall meetings and meet with their state henchmen and figure out shiftier ways to fleece the public. And they're doing this on both sides of the aisle, man. Okay, I mean, let's just be honest about it. Yes, I am a conservative. Yes, love that Constitution. Crazy about all the amendments. Absolutely convinced that they are they're for everyone. They are for every United States citizen. Every amendment, everything in the Constitution applies to every U.S. citizen, period. I don't care who you are. Gay, straight, black, white, doesn't matter. If you're a United States citizen, you're subject to the laws of the Constitution. I believe in the Constitution. It's a turnkey document for running this country as it needs to be run. However, having said that, I think it was Adams. We'll find out here in a minute. But I think it was Adams or Madison. It's one of the two. That the Constitution was a document suitable for governing a just and moral people, and it was useless to anyone else. And I got to thinking, any of you guys that know me know my love affair with history, American history in particular, history in general, but American history, and more specifically, the Second World War, and that era from 1933 to 1945. Remarkable, astonishing era. Even with the problems, and I'll rule out a couple, I'll exclude a couple potential problems, such as communist China. But even with all the problems that have that beset us in the modern times, we still have not faced a greater existential threat than what we faced during the Second World War, what we faced with Nazism, with the expansion of the Empire of Japan, with communism, with fascism. Close to 20 years, you may as well just say, close to 20 years, fundamentally, I have immersed myself in that time frame. And a lot of it stems from my love for old-time radio shows. But, excuse me, it goes beyond that. I'd always had a thing for World War II. When I was a kid in the 60s, my uncles were young men in their 40s, fundamentally. And those memories of the Second World War were still very fresh. They were still very green. We talked about this on the D-Day show a couple of weeks back, so you guys know where I'm coming from. But it is the people of that time frame versus the conditions under which we live today. We are better fed. We are healthier. We are stronger. We have a longer, thank you, we have a longer lifespan. We have an abundance of life and labor-saving technology that surround us, making our lives convenient and very easy. In all likelihood, we have access to wider avenues of information and the ability to disseminate it. What about the goodness? The justness. I'm not talking about justice. I'm not the justness. People that are good and true and just. I think that it was clearly a much sterner, much stronger moral fiber in those days. I think that the value system was not nearly, and from that value system, from our social value system in the mores of that time, considerably superior to what we have now. I think we had a much stronger, more balanced and well-defined sense of right and wrong. I think that we had a greater, a much greater national spirit and a collective will, a nationalist collective will. In order, we could not have done what we did in World War II had we not had those things. We would not win World War II today, people. We'd give it a hell of a shot because there are still a few of us that hold to those fundamental tenets. Those truths which they held to be self-evident of their time. We couldn't do it. Too many candy asses. Too many sissies. Too many not in my backyards. Too many not me brothers. I just don't see it. A different people, a stronger people. Like I said, in certain instances, clearly we have technological and scientific advances that, as I've said, have made our lives easier. They've made us healthier, stronger, better fed. We're taller. So in certain respects, yeah, it's pretty cool to be here. But in the elements of this national alloy that we compose, all of us here, now, then as well, I don't think we have the stronger elements. I think they did. That worries me sometimes. It really does. It worries me sometimes. Something to think about anyway. I guess we need to go ahead and do an update. We have another update. This is yesterday. Dr. Kelly Ward and the Maricopa County forensic audit. They're closing in on the end of this thing, guys. Probably by August. Probably by August. And we're hoping to see... I'm hoping to see evidence of what we all know to be true, fundamentally. There it is, 621. Dr. Kelly Ward, chairman of the Arizona GOP, with yesterday's update on what's going on with the Maricopa audit.
Hello, Arizona. It is time for the daily update
from
the Republican Party of Arizona. I am your chairwoman, Dr. Kelly Ward.
Dr. Kelly Ward.
Secretary of State, radical leftist liberal Democrat Katie Hobbs, is on Twitter calling for an end to the full forensic audit of the 2020 Maricopa County election. Again. This time her reason is a story from her allies on CNN who appear to have stolen a story from local reporter Jen Throwafit Field without even giving her credit for her misinformation. How dare they? CNN claims that data from the Maricopa County audit was taken to a secure lab somewhere in Montana. They even sent a reporter to Montana to the private property of one of the executives of a company that is a contractor for the forensic audit. The network also appears to want to dox the auditor if they can get away with it by just showing a little video highlighting his property and going to realtor.com to get information about it. The reporter says he did pass no trespassing signs at the Montana property, so he had to resort to drone footage and real estate listings of the property to get out his propaganda. His so-called expose showed a home, a rather nice one, and a barn, and a lot of acres. But the CNN flunky informed Anderson Cooper that there was no sign of a secure lab, in his expert opinion. It's oh so mysterious. Also admitted that he had no facts to deal with. He said this, is this the secure, powerful laboratory? Is Arizona voting data inside that cabin? We just don't know. But it could
and
be.
We're going to see silly season.
Is that supposed to be journalism?
Oh my God.
Thank goodness President Trump exposed CNN for being fake news and woke up America
stupid
to
news,
the propaganda
evidently.
Being spewed by them. The factual information that we have is that the company in question, Cypher, does have a secure lab. It makes sense that they would have a secure lab since the company does work for the United States Department of Defense, the DOD, as well as other federal agencies and Fortune 500 companies. While I don't know the particulars about this company, most DOD contractors are required to have security clearances, a fact that media outlets like CNN are ignoring. Over the last year, many of us have learned to work remotely using VPNs or other security measures. It really can be done securely, and I'm sure Cypher knows how. If a Cypher executive is working remotely and securely from his Montana home, how is that a news story? The story should be why the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors will not demand that Dominion hand over the Splunk logs, hardware keys, and passwords subpoenaed by the Arizona State Senate. I'm sure if we got that information, it would assure the Arizona voters that the tabulation machines were never connected to the internet, and also inform us as to where and how they crunched our protected voter data. Leftist Katie Hobbs, who is focused on raising her profile in any way she can to grab on even more power in our state by running for governor, has a vested interest in making sure that nothing negative is found by the Arizona audit. After all, the 2020 election happened on her watch, and she was the statewide official in charge of the election. Draw your own conclusions. We're going to continue to keep you updated on the audit and on other important issues. And remember, here at the Republican Party of Arizona, always, America first. See you next time.
Thanks, Kelbo. There are, as we've talked about here on this show a lot, you know, there are a lot of different places in the country that are looking very closely at what's going on in Maricopa County in Arizona. There have been a number of states. I think Pennsylvania has sent a delegation. Georgia, maybe, and perhaps even New Hampshire have sent delegations. And there are other states, I just can't think of them right offhand. Have sent delegations down there to look at the security and the transparency of how these folks in Maricopa County, Arizona, are conducting this forensic audit. A couple weeks ago, Merrick Garland from the Department of Justice said that he was mobilizing Department of Justice representatives to Arizona to pay close attention to what's going on with this audit, quote, in the interests of protecting against voter fraud. No, I'm not making it up. The Biden Justice, the Biden Department of Justice. Isn't that an oxymoron? Biden Department of Justice. Anyway. So Mark Brinovich, who is the attorney general for the state of Arizona, fired a shot across the bow at the Department of Justice last week. Here's what he had to say. And this is where it's going to get interesting. Dear Attorney General Garland, late last week, you made troubling comments about the ongoing efforts in states to ensure election integrity. Your statements displayed an alarming disdain for state sovereignty as defined under the 10th Amendment of the United States Constitution and the provisions in Articles 1 and 2. Your comments followed a May 5th letter from Pamela Carlin of the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division on the subject of the Arizona Senate's oversight of the Maricopa County audit. This letter appeared more interested in supporting the hysterical outcries of leftist pundits on cable television rather than the rule of law. My office is not amused by the Department of Justice's posturing and will not tolerate any effort to undermine or interfere with our state Senate's audit to reassure Arizonans of the accuracy of our elections. We stand ready to defend federalism and state sovereignty against any partisan attacks or federal overreach. Let me read that again. We stand ready to defend federalism and state sovereignty against any partisan attacks or federal overreach. It is important to remember that the states created the federal government, not the other way around. America's founders intentionally restrained the federal government's constitutional boundaries to ensure each state could flourish in their unique ways. Today, our federal government has largely forgotten the founders' intent, but my office has not. I like this guy. There are no issues more important for states to prioritize than the integrity of our elections. This is the cornerstone of our republic, binding together the people's trust in the whole of government. Today, we see mistrust in our elections from Americans on all sides of the political spectrum. This should not be a partisan issue. States can and should take every opportunity to reassure all citizens that their vote counts. My office looks for ways to work alongside the federal government to uphold our laws within the constraints of the 10th Amendment and the election provisions in Articles 1 and 2. As I have demonstrated several times, however, Arizona will not sit back and let the Biden administration abuse its authority, refuse to uphold laws, or attempt to commandeer our state's sovereignty. Respectfully, Mark Rinovich, Attorney General. Bravo. Bravo. Well said. I am the last one on earth, as I have said many, many times, to advocate violence. I'm just simply not that guy. But at some point, let me put it this way. Could you imagine if Joseph Robinette Biden III was president of the United States December 7th, 1941? How do you think that would play out? Is it related to what I just read? No, but in a way, and we'll get to that. Channeling a little Cutler there. Yeah, we would be speaking Japanese. Those of us that were still left alive. And it is important, I think, to remember what he pointed out in that the states, the several states, created the federal government. And I can promise you that the founding fathers would never, ever have entered into a compact as ironclad as what we see today in the relationship between the federal government and the several states. They wouldn't enter into it if they thought there was no way of getting out of it. That was the whole reason they fought the Civil War. Yeah, slavery, got it. It was a far too intrusive federal government that was fundamentally usurping powers that the states believed belonged to them, states' rights. It's an old issue, and it has become more and more a bone of contention these days, probably than it was in 1861. But again, you know, the bottom line here with all this, and it is, it makes for good talking, I guess. I don't know, good radio, you know, and a lot of speculation from people like you and me that just sit around, you know, hanging out and talk about this stuff. But again, it brings me back to what I always say on these things these days, and I hate to be so cynical. I really do. But what's going to happen? Is anybody going to get it? Is anybody going to get perped walked? No. Are we going to see, you know, some high state official or some Democrat Party official walking between a couple of federal agents, a trench coat draped over their hands to hide the handcuffs? No, we're not going to see that. Oh, maybe on a county level, some low-level Democrat fixer in places like Atlanta or Philly or Detroit or L.A., you know, some secondary, third-level drone. They might get it in the neck for a few months, but who else? Nobody. So in many ways, in many ways, a lot of this stuff, it's just so fundamental. It's anticlimactic. I mean, it sells. I mean, we talk about it, and it's kind of like a soap opera. You know, it's serialized episode after episode, and it plays out over time. And You know, there's a, it's like, excuse me. Let me hit the pause button on that. Great God. Okay, everything's all right. What were we talking about? Oh, the election. You know, and these people, nothing happens. I mean, there's always a buildup. It's like Al Capone's vault. Okay, it's like Geraldo Rivera and Al Capone's vault. You guys, I don't know, some of you guys probably don't even remember that turkey. It was back in the mid-80s. They had discovered what was believed to be a vault in one of Capone's hangouts in Chicago. It had never been opened. We don't know what's in here. It could be anything. Could be jewels, could be bootleg liquor, could be Tommy guns, could be J. Edgar Hoover. We just don't know. And so there's this tremendous buildup for like a couple of weeks over this live special. And live on TV, they open this thing up. There's nothing in the damn thing. There's a couple broken bottles, a 1929 Police Gazette magazine. I mean, nothing. There was nothing in there. And that's what these things are. And they run both sides. You know, they tried to impeach Donald Trump twice over nothing, just to do it, just for, you know, kicks. Didn't work. We have all this book on Hillary Clinton and the crimes that she's committed with the servers and that convoluted system that ran the PP Gate story from the State Department through CIA contributors to Glenn Greenwald and Michael Steele and that whole screwed up mess, Bruce and Nellie Orr and all deal. Nothing happened. James Comey came out and said, well, yeah, she did all this stuff, but she didn't mean to, guys. So there's really, since she didn't mean to, you know, there's nothing we can do. There's no intent. Daggone it. And that was that. That was the end of it. Who knows how many people have died under questionable circumstances connected to the Clintons that nothing's ever going to happen. Nothing is ever going to happen. Nothing ever happens. It's always the same thing. What's Gary got here? Gary's trying to show me something. Is that one of Stucci's cigars? They found one of Rocky Stucci's cigar butts in Al Capone's vault. Okay, that's good. But I'll tell you what, we're down at the bottom of the hour. I'm going to take a little break here. We're going to play some music, and I'll come back with more of something. We got Tucker Carlson's got a really good it's about 16 minutes because you know how windy he is. But it's awesome. Heard it night before last, I think. Anyway, we'll have that up for you. And I'm going to try. I don't even know what I'm going to play. Well, no, I don't like that. I don't like that either. I already played that. I don't want to play that either. Okay, here we go. We're cool. We'll be back with more of ACP right after this.
In my direction, I caught it in my hands today. I finally made a tricky French connection. You winked and gave me your okay. I'll take you on a trip beside the ocean and drop the top of Chesapeake Bay. Ain't nothing like the sky to dose a potion. The moon send you on your way. Feels right. Moonlight. Feels right. We'll lay back and observe the constellations and watch the moon smile and bright. you know I'm giving you a warning, 'cause me and Luna isn't to play. I'll take you on a trip beside the ocean and drop the top of Chesapeake Bay. Ain't nothing like the sky to do the potion. The moon will send you on.
Okay, we got it. We got it. We're back. We're going to go ahead and call that back. Welcome, Conservatives Perspective, Patriot Nation Radio here on Blog Talk Radio. Twice a week is when we do it live, Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We also have a recorded version of the show that goes out on the Mojo 5.0 Radio Network, mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, you should be, because it is the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio, along with the outstanding programming we have right here on Patriot Nation Radio. For example, United Patriots Uprising, another outstanding show last night. Knocked it totally out of the park. as he does. Now, ordinarily, Gary does this, ordinarily, Gary does this every other Monday. So since he did it last night, logic would dictate that he would not be doing a show next Monday, but he is. And it marks the 1 year anniversary of United Patriots Uprising. And I'm just going to sit back and emit a very self-satisfied chuckle. Anyway, it's a terrific program. One of the proudest radio things I've ever really been. I'm prouder of it probably than I am anything else I've done in radio, because it's just such a terrific show. Outstanding host, outstanding guests. And July 26th, I think, is what that is. Let me check, because Gary tells me all about this stuff. Okay, July 26th, I'm getting a teletype. I'm getting an incoming telegram from Brother Benford right now, the Benfro himself. Well, no, now he's not going to write it. What, dude? Finish it up, man. I'm waiting on you. Anyway, he was writing something. You know, you see that little, oh, okay, there, he, yeah. Anyway, Lieutenant General Michael T. Flynn is going to be on Gary's program on the 26th of July. No, I'm not making it up. I'm serious. That General Flynn, yeah. The one that I ordered to fire my gun, that same one. That's just huge, man. That is just huge. You have no idea. And if you're listening tonight, please, July 26th, United Patriots Uprising. You're going to be there. Tell your friends. Tell everybody. Michael T. Flynn with Gary Benford. That's going to be slamming. Okay, I'm going to go back. I really do mean this. I was just thinking about this, and I've been thinking about it for a while. I really do believe fundamentally that Mr. and Mrs. America of 1939, 1938, 39, 40, 41, up through the war years, a far superior American to what we have today. Absolutely. You know, these people knew privation. They knew hard times. They were just coming out of the Great Depression. And that was nationwide. There was no rest, but there was no true escape from the Depression of the 1930s. There just wasn't. And then they're faced, you know, they go from economic hard times and the privation of the financial straits, the dire financial straits that America was in through that time, to the existential threat. Being broke, don't worry about being broke. Worry about being dead, because the Japanese are coming. And as soon as Hitler gets finished in Europe, you know where he's coming next. And yes, we had the great insulators of the Atlantic and the Pacific Oceans, respectively. However, it would have been only a question of time. And time was the one commodity that the world didn't have in dealing with this particular type of tyranny. We had to act. We had to act boldly. We had to act decisively. And we had to act quickly. And as soon as the nation, from a morale standpoint, picked itself up and shook itself off, we went to work. But it wasn't easy. We lost Wake Island. We lost Singapore. The Japanese were threatening Australia and New Zealand. They made expansions into almost all of China, Vietnam, Korea, Thailand, Burma, moving towards India. Peleliu, Tarawa, the Marshalls, the Solomons. And we geared up, and we fought a war on two fronts. And not only did we arm ourselves, we armed our allies. Tanks, jeeps, trucks, rifles, pistols, ammunition, machine guns, artillery shells, destroyers, airplanes, lots and lots of airplanes. And in order to do that, and in order to there had to be a very strong, as I said earlier, nationalist will, a national commitment to victory. And I, you know, if something like that happened today, and you know what? Something like that can happen today, but instead of Japan, it'll be China. I think it's called the 100-year war. It's in my pile over here somewhere. Yeah, that's it. The 100-year war was recommended to me by Claire Lopez. And it was written a couple years ago, about 10, 15 years ago in China, by a Chinese intelligence, a colonel in the Chinese intelligence wing, and probably somebody from you know, a political standpoint. But what it did is it outlined the strategy of this long-term 100-year campaign against the United States. They've got it all mapped out, and they're following this plan. Elected officials here have no true vision beyond re-election. And when they're looking at that, they're looking at themselves. They're not looking at what's going to be good for the country. They might be looking at what's good for their ideology, but they're not looking at what's good for the country. It's very partisan. It's very self-centered. China's looking into the next century. Now, the evidence for all this is out there if you have the inclination and the time to look at it. Frank Gaffney at Freedom Center, American Freedom Center, is a great place to look. Lopez Liberty, and anywhere Claire's writing about it, you can find out about this. The problem is this. As Lyndon Johnson would have once said, they have Joe Biden's pecker in their front pocket. I know that's a gross thing to say, but that's what he said. And he's absolutely right. Joe Biden is going to make noise. He's going to make a lot of noise about coming down hard on China and saying he's going to do this and he's going to do that. But here's the deal. He's not going to do any of that. He's going to stand by, noisily by, because he will, he'll make noise, but he's going to stand by, noisily and idly by, while China works out its plan to, you know, fundamentally achieve not only hegemony in the Pacific, but become the world's dominant superpower. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And this has been going on for a while. Democrats have been in on this scam for a long time. We can go back to the Clinton era when he was selling them missile guidance system technology from L'Oreal Space Technologies. He basically gave them a 20-year upgrade in their missile guidance systems, and missile guidance systems are what are used to point nuclear weapons at strategic targets in the United States. Speaking of strategic targets, I told you this was going to be like random neural firing tonight. Let's see, where the hell is it? There's this thing that Firefox has called a pocket, and you can like just bookmark certain things, and it'll take them to your pocket, and you can leave them on. Okay, where is it? Ah, yeah, here it is. Last week at the Biden-Putin summit, one of the topics that had come up has been, you know, the cyber warfare that's being conducted by Mother Russia against the United States. It's the KGB, all right? It's the KGB, well, whatever that is. I think it's the FSB now, Federal Security Bureau, or whatever they call themselves, Russian intelligence. And they have active computer hackers working and conducting cyber warfare operations against America's infrastructure. They've done it for a long time. You're going to think that I am making this up, but I am not making this up. Are you sitting down? Okay. President Joe Biden said last Wednesday he gave, and again, I am not making this up, he gave Russian President Vladimir Putin a list of places he considered critical infrastructure in the United States, warning Russians not to attack them. I gave them a list, if I'm not mistaken, I don't have it in front of me, 16 specific entities, Biden said, 16 defined as critical infrastructure under U.S. policy, from the energy sector to our water systems. Oh, my God. Biden spoke about his list for Putin during a press conference with reporters after his summit with the Russian president. He warned Russia that the critical listed infrastructure in the United States was off limits in future. You can't attack these places, Putin. You can attack our traffic light system, okay? You can attack our, telecable system. But these other places, no, you can't attack. These are off limits, Vlad. I talked about the proposition. Oh, okay. He didn't really tell them they were off limits. He talked about the proposition that certain critical infrastructures should be off limits. Oh, my God. Since Biden became president, incidents of cyber criminals unleashing ransomware attacks on infrastructure in the United States has increased, including an attack on the Colonial Pipeline, JBS Foods, which is the world's largest meat producer. But Biden did not say he threatened Putin with consequences if the cyber attacks continue. He knows there are consequences, said Biden. And I wish to hell he would tell me what they are so that when he does something, we'll know what to do. God. Okay, now, there you go. Can you imagine this cat president, December 1941? We sent the Emperor of Japan the most favorable air routes to attack the critical points at Pearl Harbor, and we explained to him that he better not do that. Good. Golly, Miss Molly. Are you worried now, people? Maybe just a little bit? Unbelievable. Un-damn-believable. But that's the times that we're living in. The interesting times that we're living. Speaking of living in interesting times, our pal Mike Cutler sent me an email. As he does, I'm on the inside track with Mike, and he's always kind enough to send me his work whenever he publishes it and saves me the time of going to have to look for it. And that way I can showcase it on our Facebook presences and other places as well. The Biden Department of Justice, again, working to undermine Second Amendment protections here in the country. June 17th, this is our friend Michael Cutler, and it is called the Department of Justice warns states about Second Amendment sanctuaries. And you've heard a lot about this. This is a pushback on the sanctuary cities, you know, the Democrats, all these Democrat-controlled enclaves, in addition to being lawless because of the decimation of law enforcement agencies in those areas, are also sanctuary cities for illegal aliens. Well, some common sense thinking people on our side came up with the idea of sanctuary areas, sanctuary counties, sanctuary cities and towns for the Second Amendment. June 17, AOL published an Associated Press report under the title, Justice Department, Missouri Governor Can't Void Federal Gun Laws. And it started with this excerpt. The Justice Department is warning Missouri officials that the state cannot ignore federal law after the governor signed a bill last week that bans police from enforcing federal gun rules. In a letter sent Wednesday night and obtained by the Associated Press, justice officials said the U.S. Constitution's Supremacy Clause outweighs the measure that Governor Mike Parson signed into law Saturday. The new rules penalize local police departments if their officers enforce federal gun laws. Acting Assistant Attorney General Brian Boynton said the law threatens to disrupt the working relationship between federal and local authorities. They said, they said in the letter, noting that Missouri receives federal grants and technical assistance. In other words, you know, we can cut your federal money off. To which the governor should say, okay, well, we'll cut your federal money off. We won't send you our tax revenues anymore, and we won't allow you to collect them for you. Ha! See how quickly this goes. States' rights, people. Tricky stuff. The public safety of the people of the United States and the citizens of Missouri is paramount. The DOJ did not have to wait long for a response. Just hours later, as reported by ABC News, Missouri responds defiantly to Justice Department over their gun law, which noted in part, similar bills were introduced in more than a dozen other states this year, including Alabama, Arkansas, Nebraska, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Tennessee, Utah, Wyoming, New Hampshire, South Dakota, West Virginia, and Iowa. The governor has called for the state to become a so-called Second Amendment sanctuary. Wow. A new form of sanctuary policies enacted by state governments and the federal government under Mr. Biden's leadership is upset. Having uttered the magic word sanctuary, we cannot ignore that over the past several decades, a growing number of cities and states, almost invariably led by radical leftists, have implemented so-called sanctuary policies that to varying degrees hamper cooperation between local and state police and federal immigration law enforcement authorities. Certainly, our nation's immigration laws are serious laws that were enacted to protect national security, public safety, public health, and the jobs and wages of Americans. Frequently, these sanctuary policies have increased to the point where detainees lodged by the Immigration and Customs Enforcement personnel have been blatantly ignored so that aliens who have serious criminal histories were released from custody rather than be turned over to ICE so that they could be deported from the United States. A few of these cases have received attention from the media, but in reality, a huge number of such criminal aliens who should have been removed from the United States were permitted to roam freely in towns and cities across America, all too frequently with tragic results. Consider the horrific case of 32-year-old Kate Steinle, shot to death by Jose Garcia Zarate, a citizen of Mexico who was illegally here in the United States and had an extensive criminal history here in the country. He'd been previously deported from America 5 times, so his mere presence in the United States constituted a felony under a provision of the Immigration and Nationality Act. On December 1, 2017, Business Insider published a report about the case, talking about Kate Steinle's death at the hands of a Mexican national. See how they do that, people? See how they try to Orwell us? Yeah, okay, Mexican national, more to the point, an illegal alien. Illegal alien. Not undocumented migrant, none of that crap. Illegal alien. Now, at the time of Kate Steinle's murder, Garcia Zarate had been convicted of nonviolent drug crimes and deported five times from America since the early 1990s. He was looking at being deported again in 2015 and was in Justice Department custody that March after serving almost 4 years in prison for a felony reentry to the U.S. But instead of transferring him into the custody of Immigration and Customs Enforcement for deportation, the Department of Justice transferred him to the San Francisco County Jail for prosecution of a 1995 marijuana charge. San Francisco prosecutors long ago, deprioritized marijuana charges. Now, you know as well as I do, the Department of Justice was probably well aware of the fact that this practice had taken place in San Francisco. But they sent him there anyway. And since marijuana charges had been deprioritized, they weren't even looking at them, they were fooling with them, they dismissed the charge. They released him. And when they released him, due to San Francisco's policy of limiting cooperation with federal immigration authorities, which some people refer to as a sanctuary policy, they did not inform ICE when they released Garcia. And it is at this point that my friend Cutler goes into the law and he's listed the entire testament. We're not going to do that. Suffice to say, he didn't need to be here. He was committing a felony. He had committed multiple felonies by returning to the United States every time he came. But he sums it up, as he often does, because this guy... Anyway, if you've been listening when Michael Cutler's been a guest, I don't need to say anything else. Our nation's Constitution and its laws are not a menu from which the picky eaters can decide what to order and what not to order. It's hypercritical and it is beyond outrageous that the Department of Justice would attack sanctuary policies regarding the Second Amendment while not only sanctioning immigration sanctuary policies, but actually emulating those extremely dangerous policies in clear violation of standing federal law and in direct opposition to the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission. And the 9/11 Commission was just as much about tightening up immigration policy as anything else. Not dead air, just getting a drink. You know, this is going to sound kind of pessimistic, and that is rare for me. It really is. I'm becoming doubtful of any real change. And if it does come, it's not going to come from Washington, D.C. It's not going to come from the White House. It's not going to come from the Oval Office. It's not going to come from the Oval Office. It's not going to come from Congress or the Senate. It's not going to come from the lobbyists. It's not going to come from the think tanks. Fortunately, if it does happen, the brains won't have a whole lot to do with it, at least these brains that are up in D.C. No, man, it's going to come down to us. You and I. There's no other way. There's no other way. Look at everything that is stacked against us, you and I. No question the government's stacked against us. Yeah, there are a couple of guys in there swinging and they're doing what they can do, but you can't count on them. We can root for them and we can hope for the best, but we can't count on them. Orrin Hatch once said that, you know, it was impossible to go to Washington and return an honest man. I believe that. Harry Truman once said it's impossible to go into it's impossible to get rich in politics unless you're dishonest. It's impossible for an honest man to get rich in politics. But they do, don't they? Nancy Pelosi, Mitch McConnell, much, anybody? Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein, Chuck Schumer, Paul Ryan, John Boehner. Remember the original orange-faced man? The crybaby. He was almost crying all the time. Nah, it's going to come down to us. And like I said, we live in an age when weaklings call the shots. Has anybody seen our deputy director of health and human services? Anybody seen Rick Levin? I know Rachel Levine, right? I got you. But you know, come on, people. Okay. Would someone like that have attained such high office in 1940? And why would they not have? For the same reasons they should not today. But there he is. Had to reach down and pet the dog. She was having a nightmare. It's okay, babe. Do you see where I'm going with this? What do you think the public's response in 1940 would have been to a man insisting that the entire world believe that he is a girl and that he can go into the ladies' restroom? What do you think 1940 America would have said about the idea of letting boys likewise pretend to be girls and compete in athletic competitions? And they would be correct in responding the way that they would. People! None of this stuff is good. They try to tell us it's good, that it's right, it's equal, it's just. No. No, it's not. It's bad. It's unequal. It's criminal. It's not just. It's just awful. It's just stupid. Stupid. Think about all the nutty-ass things that these liberal fools endorse. And think about Mr. and Mrs. 1940 America. Now you tell me who's right. Tell me. Tell me who's right. Yeah. Yeah. What the hell happened? And that's a good question, actually. One of many questions. Karen Catalan from Front Page Mag a couple days ago came up with 20 questions that the left should be asked, but never will be. Probably a lot more than 20, but these are the ones that she came up with. Why? And as I ask these questions, we are addressing them to the establishment media and their left-wing minions. Why do you claim, Jim Acosta, you little twerp, to have such concern for our health and safety as a society? But you want to open up our borders and let criminals out of jail. We see it everywhere. Number two, why is it misinformation? I'm using my air fingers quotes. Why is it misinformation and a threat to democracy to tolerate and encourage independence of thought rather than suppressing it? And how arrogant does a person have to be to believe that he is the final arbiter of the truth? Fauci much? Anybody? Have you seen what that little rat bastard has said lately? Now that everything's coming undone with him, and we're finding out that he did launder money through a middleman to fund gain-of-function research in Wuhan. To criticize Fauci is to criticize science itself. Joy Reid, how does it fight racism to encourage hatred and bigotry toward white people? Don Lemon, how does it help black people to constantly tell them that they are victims? Joe Biden, why are all your gun laws aimed at law-abiding citizens rather than criminals? What's the real reason you want to disarm law-abiding citizens while at the same time doing everything you can to make their lives more dangerous? How is it that accusations of racism accelerated exponentially after Barack Obama, a black man, was twice elected president of the United States? We are not a racist nation, people. We put a black man in the White House twice. Not once, but twice. I don't know what the hell you were thinking with that particular black man. Could have been a black man like Herman Lewis. Nope. Herman Lewis ran a Union 76 station on Raleigh Hill. No way, that was Herman Lieber. Herman Cain, let's try him. Herman Cain, now there's a good boy. Okay, it could have been a black man like Herman Cain. Herman Lewis, what the hell? Okay, anyway, let's move on. But we are not a racist nation. We elected a black man president of the United States twice. Wrong black man. Totally, you know, it was a black man totally unqualified for the job, but we elected him. So we're not racist. We're going to be stupid, but we're not racist. Number eight, why do you accentuate the race of a minority person if he's the victim of a crime, but demand that we ignore a minority person's race if he is the perpetrator of a crime? For that matter, why do we ignore certain crimes altogether when the victim is white? How is it racist to want to secure a border for everyone regardless of their race? Further, how is it racist to require all voters to show an ID regardless of their race? Wait a minute. I upset the Benfro. Check up here a minute. We'll come back to the questions. He went all caps on me. He's busting caps on me. Oh, God. Ha-ha! Don't call Obama a black man. I got to own half of him. Say what? Yeah, I guess so. You're right. Besides, everybody knows Bill Clinton was the first black man elected president of the United States. And that's got to burn Barack Obama's butt every time he thinks about it. Because they still say that about old Slick Willie. Yeah, I was the first black president, and I'm not even black. I haven't come close to, well, I have come close to black. But we're talking about something else. And what I would like to say about that is, yeah, I understand. That's a good time. So then, okay, all right, Gary, you're right. But we elected a half black man, so we're not totally racist, I guess. I have to qualify that then. All right. No, we're not going back to that. Let's get back to the pocket here. Where are we at? Yeah, there we go. Why is it racist? Why isn't it, rather? And this is another good one. Why isn't it racist to claim that minorities are too stupid to figure out how to get an ID? Okay, voter ID is voter suppression. Why? Well, because a lot of minorities are just too stupid to figure out how to get an ID. That's not racist. No. Here's an even better question. How would you gauge progress in your declared fight against racism? What would that look like, and would you ever acknowledge it? Al Sharpton, really good case in point. Jesse Jackson, who's kind of been laying low here lately and letting River now take over. Joy Reid, Don Lemon. There are a number of notable cultural Marxists who are black, who are race hustlers and race baiters. And look, here's the thing, people. If the truth comes out and we find out that America is nowhere near, and I believe this to be true, nowhere near the level of racism that these hustlers, these race baiters would have us believe, then guess what? Al Sharpton's out of a job. Jesse Jackson's out of work. Joy Reid, Don Lemon, Van Jones. No shortage of them. No shortage of them. They're out of a job. So there you go. That's why they say that. So I don't think they would ever acknowledge that there was actually ultimately a victory over racism. As I believe there has been. This is all just trumped up, man. It's propaganda. It's part of their narrative. It's part of what they use to divide this country, one American from the other. What are they trying to accomplish by overbroadening that term itself, racist? And, you know, I mean, they've done it, everything now, okay? Birds are racist. The names of certain birds are racist. Certain toys are racist. Certain food is racist. You know, it's like the Nazi thing. You know what I mean? George Bush was a Nazi. Come to find out, and my pal Cutler, I don't know if we're going to have time. Yeah, we got a little bit of time. Take a little break and we'll get to it. Friend Cutler has another article talking about the Chinese money that's connected to the Bush family. Yes, both sides, people. Both sides. Mitch McConnell's wife, Elizabeth Chao, her father runs the shipping industry that basically the communist Chinese trans-Pacific shipping lines. And they're shipping boatloads of money to the McConnells. Anyway, back to this. Number 14, why did the media ignore good news stories related to COVID-19 but continued to push the panic button for a year and a half? The loss of loved ones by suicide, bankruptcies, drug addictions, overdoses, and deaths, despair, heartbreak, it is incalculable what Americans have gone through because of some of these draconian lockdown measures that we've seen. Are these people at all culpable? Will anything happen to them? Why is it a riot to march peacefully and patriotically to protest Congress's refusal to examine voter fraud, but it's not a riot or insurrection to burn and loot major cities and take over 6 blocks of downtown Seattle? Remember back last year in the Summer of Love. Why are we discovering that the opposing ideas that they have censored the most, voter fraud, for example, origins of the virus, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, the dangers of these vaccines, the efficacies of masks, all these things that they opposed have turned out to be true. If they're censoring the truth on purpose, isn't it reasonable for us to conclude that they are deliberately perpetrating a fraud on the American people? Yes, by God, I believe it is incredibly reasonable to do that. And if that's the case, why are they doing it? What's the ultimate purpose of that? And who's calling the shots behind it? Why won't the media mention Biden's obvious and growing dementia? How can you claim to be morally outraged by slavery while advocating policies that treat us all like slaves? How aware are you that the ideology and tactics that you are supporting is textbook communism and that it will lead to your own destruction as well as ours? Useful idiots. The media are the progressive left and the Communist Party's useful idiots. And should, God forbid, their objectives be obtained, if nothing else, we can take joy in the fact that Jim Acosta is going to get it in the head. And if you're aware of these things in these first 20 questions, but you're so firmly entrenched in that ideology that you refuse to alter your behavior or your views, how can you sleep at night? And this isn't directed to you guys. This isn't directed to you all at all. We know what goes on here. Arbitron ratings have time after time proved, as well as laboratory test acid, over and over. 4 out of 5 dentists, patients chew gum will tell you that folks that listen to conservative talk radio programs like this and others that are a lot better. You know, you guys, we're above the curve, okay? We are above the curve in disseminating news and looking for it in places beyond the establishment. Figure we're going to take a little bit of a break. I got some Tucker Carlson I want to go with. That's kind of a long clip, and I want to save up time for that. And we will be back with more of a conservative perspective right here on Patriot Nation Radio.
How y'all doing? My name's Dewey Cox. Well, it looks like I got some proving myself to do.
Walk hard, hard down life's rocky road. Walk bold, hard, that's my creed, my code. I've been scorned and slandered and ridiculed too. Had to struggle every day my whole life through. Seen my share of the worst that this world can give. But I still got a dream and a burning rage to live. Walk hard, hard. When they say you're all done, walk bold. Hard, though they say you're not the one. Even if you've been told time and time again that you're always gonna lose and you're never gonna win, you gotta keep that vision in your mind's eye when you're standing on top of a mountain high. Folks used to say to me, slow down, Dewey. Don't walk so hard. And And I used to tell them, life's a race, and I'm in it to win it. And I walk as damn hard as I please. How do I walk, boys? When I meet my maker on my dying day, gonna look him in the eye and by God I'll say, I gave my word and my word was good. I took it in the face and I walked as hard as I could. Walk hard, walk hard, walk hard.
Good morning, Your Honor. May I approach the bench? I don't give a damn what anyone thinks. I stay up all night and I smoke and I drink. I'm a wanted man and I'm blowing town. Don't waste your time trying to hunt me down. The cops are saying I belong behind bars, and I'm guilty.
Guilty.
I'm guilty as charged. I ain't never lost a fight in my life. I'll send you home crying to your fat and ugly wife. If you don't believe me when I tell you this, well, let me introduce you to my rock hard friend. If you're accusing me of living too hard, well, I'm guilty. I'm guilty as charged. I ain't asking God to forgive my sins. Take a good look and you'll know where I've been. I'm dancing with the devil every night and every day. So pay attention to the things that I say. Hey! I don't need anybody's help to rise above it. If you don't like the way I'm living, buddy, why don't you shut it? When you feel the ground shaking underneath your feet, oh, that's yours truly walking down the street. Come a little closer, girl, I'll show you my scars. And I'm guilty. I'm guilty as charged. If you're saying my love is too large, then I'm guilty. I'm guilty as charged. Oh, I'm guilty. I'm guilty as charged. You got me. I'm guilty as charged.
Oh, yeah. James Bostic, a conservative perspective, back once again. I don't care what anybody says. That is probably the greatest musician's biopic movie I've ever seen. Walk Hard, The Dewey Cox Story. John C. Reilly gives a performance to me, I think, that rates critically as high. It to me is as good as what Bill Murray did in Groundhog Day. It's as good as what Steve Martin did in either Mixed Nuts or Bowfinger. I mean, it's just a tremendous tour de force comedic performance. If you haven't seen it, check it out. Try and find the director's cut if you can. Well, Tucker Carlson, you know, last summer, about this time, we were all, you know, in the throes of the summer of love, and cities were being burned. People were being People were being raped. People were being murdered. They were surrounding police precincts, trying to seal the buildings up and set fire to them with cops inside. No, I'm not making it up, and you know I'm not making it up. Defund the police was the rallying cry. For what? I don't know. But that's what they said. Tucker Carlson has some thoughts on it. This is from last night. Old Tuck goes about 16 minutes because he is a windy fellow, but that's all right. His words have merit. And rather than paraphrase, as you know, I am loath to do, it's better to hear from them than me.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. Happy Monday. It was a year ago this month, we checked the calendar, that a University of Chicago economics professor called Harold Ulig questioned in public the wisdom of defunding the police. Now, Ulig is German by birth. He's a macroeconomist by trade, so he's a fairly rational person. It's his job. And it struck Harold Ulig that maybe a functional society might want to have police around so that, say, old ladies don't get beaten up on the way to the grocery store and fewer people get shot to death, less rapes, you know, the basics. That seemed reasonable to him. Unfortunately for Harold Ulig, in the weeks right after George Floyd's death, extending to the present day, rational thinking of any kind has been prohibited by law. Nothing that is true can be said out loud. The truer it is, the more forbidden it is. So in Ulig's case, the Federal Reserve of Chicago promptly fired him from his job as an advisor. Then they went online to attack him and his support for the police as, quote, not compatible with our commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion, all of which require no police, apparently. Then the University of Chicago, his employer, began an investigation into Harold Ulig's racial views, which went on for some time. Then Janet Yellen, then the chairman of the Fed, now the secretary of the Treasury, denounced Ulig effectively as a racist. Everybody did. Defund the police. We'll be safer if we do. That's what they were saying a year ago. Everyone in charge. It was lunacy. And precisely because it was lunacy, no one was allowed to disagree with it. Here's the formula. The more self-evidently absurd a statement is, the more clearly untrue, the more viciously they have to attack anyone who points out that it's untrue, who dissents. Trans women are women. January 6th was an insurrection. Defund the police. It's childish. It's all so ridiculous, and no sane person believes a word of it. But until the fever of the moment passes, most people who have no power feel obligated to play along with whatever orthodoxy it is until reality reemerges, as inevitably it does, because you can't beat nature. In the case of crime, that may be happening now. The White House announced today that on Wednesday of this week, Joe Biden will outline a new plan to fight rising crime rates, which are skyrocketing, and the body counts that accompany them. Now, we haven't seen the plan. We can't know what's in it. The White House won't tell us. But we do have two fairly informed guesses for what we're going to discover on Wednesday. First, there will be no apologies. You will not hear Joe Biden beg forgiveness from the thousands of families whose loved ones have been killed by the Democratic Party's nihilistic embrace of crime and disorder. Looting is reparations. You go, looters. They should apologize for that. They never will. The left's ideology destroyed America's cities, but they will never under any circumstances admit that, ever. Instead, they will blame you. That's guaranteed. Our second guess is this. Whatever Democrats propose to fix the problems that they created will, in the end, make them more powerful. See how that works? They create a problem, and the solution empowers them. That's always the way it goes. So with that in mind, we expect Joe Biden to remind us on Wednesday who the real criminals are, who the threat is. People who didn't vote for Joe Biden, or as Joe Biden himself puts it, white supremacists.
We've taken steps to acknowledge and address systemic racism and the scourge of white supremacy in our own country.
Yes, forced us to confront systemic racism and white supremacy. It's just been weeks since all of America witnessed a group of thugs, insurrectionists, a political extremist, and white supremacists violently attack the capital of our democracy. I believe we're in a battle for the soul of this nation. And the simple truth is, our soul will be troubled as long as systemic racism is allowed to persist.
Yes, white supremacy is America's biggest problem. And as we've noted many times before, we still don't know, despite fervent and sincere efforts to find out, what a white supremacist is. The White House has not told us. They have refused. So as of tonight, that remains a term without definition. By the way, if you've got a definition, send it to us. We'll read it on the air. But they don't need a definition. They keep screaming, it's the greatest threat we face. So because we're highly literal on this show, we believe in language, we went searching for the numbers. Are there numbers to prove that? Because there are numbers on everything. Well, they're busy trying to create those numbers now. But for the moment, here's what we've got. Researchers at the University of Maryland run something called the Global Terrorism Database. Some of the data they produce are clearly highly political. For example, they count the Parkland school shooting as an act of white supremacist violence. It wasn't. There's no evidence that it was. How could you say that? But they say it anyway. So the numbers they have are inflated. And yet, the researchers at the University of Maryland could find fewer than 70 people in the entire country who died from white supremacist violence over the entire period between 2015 and 2019. How many people is that? Well, of course, it's too many. Any death is too many. But for some perspective, more people die in this country every year from lightning strikes, literally. Look it up. So no, white supremacist violence, bad as it may be, is not a major threat. It's not even on the list, actually. What's at the top of the list? Well, let's see. Crime. Crime tops the list. There's no second place on that list. In the year 2019 alone, there were more than 10,000 arrests for murder in this country. By the way, more murders than that, but 10,000 were arrested. Just in 2020, last year, more than 750 people were murdered just in the city of Chicago. 750. And we can say, not that anyone's asking, but in case you're wondering, with some confidence that the overwhelming majority of those suspects in the city of Chicago were not practicing white supremacists or members of QAnon. How do we know this? Well, an informed guess, but in some cases there's video. For example, this show has obtained exclusive surveillance footage of a shooting that took place this weekend, a horrifying shooting on the northwest side of Chicago. This one took place right after Puerto Rican Day parade there. You may have seen abbreviated version of this clip on social media today. We have the full version. It's on your screen as we speak. It's taken directly from a closed-circuit television camera in the city of Chicago. Now, as you watch this, ask yourself, what country is that? It's America. It's not some third-world hellhole. It's not Haiti. It's a major street in your third-largest city. So a couple with a Puerto Rican flag waving from their car, apparently minding their own business, ambushed by a mob, dragged from the car, and shot execution style right in the middle of the road. The men who shoot them take off, and then maybe the worst part, the victims just lie there bleeding because nobody comes to help. Again, what country is this? Who's running it? And why haven't we brought those people up on felony neglect charges? They deserve it. If we accept a country where things like this happen, then we are the savages. We should not accept it. Joe Biden does, though. He hasn't said a word about that shooting, and he won't, because there are no white supremacists to blame. It's one crime he'll never mention.
Here's podcam video of the horrific altercation. The brother who didn't want to be identified says his brother had rear-ended a parked car. After that, a group of up to six men inside of that car jumped out, started attacking them, and also throwing up gang signs. 24-year-old Giovanni Arzuga was shot in the head, hip, and thigh. He died at St. Mary's Hospital. His wife, 23-year-old Yasmin Perez, was shot in the neck and remains in critical condition.
Shot in the neck, and just laid there with no one helping. But that wasn't the only shooting this weekend in Chicago, far from it. In Chicago, a city, by the way, that just banned its own police from chasing suspects on foot, in all, 54 people were shot in Chicago this weekend. And it wasn't just happening there. Chicago gets a lot of attention, but it's not constrained to Chicago. In New York, where the geniuses also defunded the police, surveillance footage shows two children were nearly shot to death on Thursday in the middle of an attempted murder in the middle of the day. Watch this.
This disturbing surveillance video shows a gunman firing his weapon at a 24-year-old man inches away from two young children, brother and sister, ages 10 and 5. It happened in broad daylight Thursday. The kids were walking to this bodega before they were caught in the middle of this. At one point, you can see the sister trying to shield her younger brother with her own body.
So normal people watching that would say to themselves, whatever we're doing, we have to change. You can't have things like this. Innocent people are getting killed. Even guilty people are getting killed. People are getting killed flat out. And we can't have that because we're a civilized society. This is a decent nation. And the one thing you can't allow is that. And yet that's not the conclusion they're reaching. By the way, new polling, there's a mayor's race going on in the city of New York right now. The primary is tomorrow, which in effect is the election because it's a democratically controlled city. Fewer than 20% of New Yorkers would like to see fewer cops on the street. So most people aren't for this at all because it's insane. But the people in charge apparently haven't noticed. So now New York may change its approach even further in the wrong direction. Just days ago, officials in the city announced they were dropping charges against hundreds of rioters and looters who were arrested last year. So you wreck the city and you're not punished. It's scary, but it's not as scary as the attitudes on display in this clip. This really gets you asking deep questions about the future of the country. This is from Oakland, California. Now, several people were shot. One died during Juneteenth celebrations this weekend. That's bad. But the worst part is how people in the neighborhood reacted. They didn't seem bothered at all. Here's how they responded to the ambulance when it arrived. Last week, we showed you footage of people in Chicago dancing on a police cruiser, and now we have this. Sociopaths, and that is the word for them, celebrating a shooting by twerking. What kind of society produces people like that, who would behave like that? Do you know anyone who would behave like that? When you see people behave like that, you have to ask yourself, what are we as a society doing wrong? Is it no fathers? Is it the schools? Who knows what the answer is, but if we're not trying to find the answer, then we're going to be guaranteed more of it. Anyone who'd celebrate a shooting is not someone you want to share a country with. So we should fix that. Is there a more important task? Probably not. But it's completely ignored. Instead, our irresponsible, low IQ political leaders patronize us with the same mindless talking points, the same talk about gun control and assault weapons. Like AR-15s are the problem and not our political class, which is clearly the problem. Here, for example, we can show you many examples, but here's just one. This is the mayor of Chicago, Lori Lightfoot, featured in a local news report.
Tuesday, little Caden Swan was shot on Lakeshore Drive. 18 others were shot. 5 of them died. Wednesday, Mayor Lori Lightfoot said part of the crime issue is gun control.
If you can go over the border in Indiana and literally buy military-grade weapons at any quantity.
CPD numbers show that crime is up. Around this time last year, there were 521
lie.
People shot. Now that number is 743.
Lie in Lightfoot.
It's tiresome even to repeat it, but again, because we are literal and connected to physical reality, we feel honor-bound to tell you once more something that Lori Lightfoot, of course, knows herself. Virtually every gun crime in the city of Chicago is committed with a handgun, not with an AR-15. Virtually no crimes nationwide are committed with assault weapons. So why is she focused on assault weapons? Well, because the people who own assault weapons don't live in Chicago and didn't vote for her. So she'd be happy to disarm them. And the Biden administration, of course, feels the same way. That's why in March, the White House's lawyers argued before the Supreme Court of the United States in a development that did not get the attention it deserved, that police should be able to enter the homes of law-abiding American citizens and seize their firearms without a warrant, no judge involved. Neither any finding of mental impairment or threat of violence or any of that. In other words, your means of self-defense belong to the Biden administration. Right. This will not solve crime. It will only disarm you. The real problems here have nothing to do with the weapons used and nothing to do with the race of the people committing the crimes. It's not a black person problem. It's not a white person problem. It's not white supremacy. It's not black supremacy. It's bad leadership by the people in charge. And it's on display all around us. Prosecutors, many of them funded by one man, George Soros, refusing to enforce the law. And the results are immediate. In the city of Philadelphia, for example, where George Soros helped elect Larry Krasner as the DA, arrests are hitting record levels, but convictions are dropping. In other words, the cops are doing their part, and the prosecutors are refusing to do theirs. Result, the city is now on pace to far exceed its murder rate from 30 years ago. 1990 was the previous high. They're about to beat it. So what happens when prosecutors do enforce the law and use it to target the people committing crimes? Well, that's the way the country used to work. And by the way, it works. And we have new academic research tonight to show that. Researchers at the University of Pennsylvania and Princeton found that gang takedowns by cops explain nearly a quarter of all reduction in so-called gun violence in housing projects in New York City after 2011. In other words, you go after the people you know are committing the crimes, and then you've got a lot less crime. The gangs are committing the crimes in these cities, particularly in Chicago. So if Joe Biden was serious about protecting children from being murdered on the street or people at the Puerto Rican Day parade from getting killed next to their car, he would go after the gangs. Oh, but he's probably not going to do that on Wednesday. He's also not going to say a word about prosecutors like Larry Krasner, funded by his friend George Soros, calling them to enforce the law. No. We also don't think he's going to call on criminals to stop twerking on ambulances in Oakland or police cars in Chicago. Those are Biden voters. The people Joe Biden is going to target on Wednesday are the ones who don't support him and live far from the collapsing cities. In other words, it's your fault. He'll tell you that. You watch.
Hey, Sean Hannity here. Hey, click here to subscribe to Fox News YouTube.
Shut up, Sean. They really are working hard at trying. Good gosh. They're really working hard at trying to circumvent, fundamentally destroy, or at least render it of any true effectiveness, the Second Amendment. What is that old saying? When seconds count, the police are minutes away. Where I grew up and when I grew up was a different time and a very different place from today. I won't say that it was mandatory, but just about, because I can't really remember, but just about everyone took in those days what was, and they probably don't even do it nowadays in schools. They probably haven't for a long time. It was called the West Virginia Safe Hunters Firearms Safety Course. Officers from the Division of Natural Resources would come in to the schools in junior high, and they would teach the elements of how to safely handle a firearm, a revolver, a semi-automatic pistol, a shotgun, a guns, how to safely handle them. And there was an accompanying film, you know, just like in Driver's Ed, the cautionary films that they show you. And with good reason, because a gun will kill you just like a car. And that was the whole point that they wanted to get across to you. It is a tool, like a hammer, like an axe. And no one has anything to fear from a law-abiding citizen who is capable of responsibly handling a firearm. In the good person's hands, this gun is no threat. I'm straight away from that. I don't understand why, but, you know, that's probably part of that whole progressive Marxist cultural agenda, their cultural Marxist agenda to go through and do that. And people want to talk about video games. They want to talk about Grand Theft Auto. They want to talk about this and that. And I suppose there's a case that can be made for it. But while we're talking about Grand Theft Auto, let's talk about inattentive parents who buy these games unaware of their content and the nature of them. They buy them because the kid wants them and shut up. Let's talk about that. And, you know, here's the thing. The people that advance these ideas that we've talked about, these negative, these harmful, these un-American, anti-American ideals, this ideology that they're seduced by. It's us and them, okay? It's an us and them thing. We talk about it, you know, we couch the language in terms of dissatisfied brethren and sistren, and that's fine. And I suppose to a certain extent, you know, in the largest measure, that probably is true, that it's a lot of dissatisfaction on both sides. There's a lot of radicalism on the left, though. A lot of radicalism. And that radicalism transcends the citizenry. It's not just, you know, a radicalized left-wing Marxist citizenry that's bought into this crap, but it's a media. You know, it's an entire information system industry. It's Hollywood. It's the New York Post. It's the New York Times. It's the LA Times. It's the Chicago Tribune. And who knows how many smaller papers in states from Maine to California. It's movies, it's video games, it's magazines, it's comic books, it's streaming video, it's Netflix. And they're all out to get us. And it's not paranoid, man. I'm not paranoid about it. It's been happening for a long time. And, you know, you have the ability and the intellectual honesty to disseminate this information. You know it as well as I do. I'm not dead air. I'm still here. If there's any cavalry that's going to ride in here in the nick of time, it's going to have to be us. We can't count on Washington, D.C. to do the right thing. A lot of state houses, a lot of cities in these Democrat-controlled enclaves throughout the country, we can't count on them to do the right thing. We can only count on ourselves. You gotta make yourself do stuff that we're not really comfortable doing. Really, we're not. Conservatives, folks like us, we get done at the end of the day, we're tired. We want to sit with our families. We want to have dinner. We want to eat in peace. Maybe watch a little TV, maybe sit on the porch. Who knows? But we don't want to go to county commission meetings. We don't want to go to Board of Education meetings, and we should. We need to. City council meetings. We need to start doing these things, and we need to start watching what's going on with these people. Who do they associate with? What ideas are they fomenting? We don't have time. We only got a few minutes left, and I'm going to wrap it up here. Critical race theory is something that we need to look at, and we need to look very closely at it, because it's a terrible, terrible thing, and it's spreading throughout school systems all over the country. Parents are starting to wake up and push back, thank God. The only way this is going to happen is through our vigilance, and the reason that things have gotten to this junction is because we have not been vigilant. 25 years, we haven't been vigilant. And now we see the consequences of a quarter century's inattention. It's a big mess. It's going to be tough to clean up. And if it gets cleaned up, we're the ones that's going to have to do it. Conservatives Perspective is heard here Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Patriot Nation Radio here at blogtalkradio.com. We have a recorded version of the program as well, and that's on the Mojo 5.0 Radio Network, Sundays, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and then at various times throughout the day in the archive, rebroadcast. We had a page on Facebook, A Conservative Perspective. But Facebook, the people who claim that they do not publish content, therefore are not subject to editorial or publishing rules, unpublished our page. Yeah, by God, they did. They unpublished it. Why? Because of all the stuff that we questioned about COVID was one of the things. It's a badge of honor. Don't worry. We're going to come up with a new page, most likely entitled ACP 2.0, in the next week or so. We're sorting out the details now. If you're just relax, we'll get to it, and we're going to promote that at that time. Mojo 5.0 Radio, the West Virginia affiliate page, Mojo 5.0, anywhere in social media you need to check out. That's all the time we have. Further proof that we live in the interesting times. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate that more than I can ever tell you. The opportunity to get to hang out with you guys and talk about stuff like this is really, really important to me. And I do my very best to get you the best guests, best information as I can find it from the very best sources. Thank you so much. That's about it for now. We'll see you on Thursday when we'll be taking a look at things as we do through a conservative perspective. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless America. We'll see you then. You guys take good care of yourselves.